Kane is in the building.
Guys, you know how much we love Liberty shirts. Their flannels are unbelievable, and when we were job hunting, we wore Liberty shirts for our interviews and now to work every day. We thought Liberty was our secret until we started seeing their shirts on TV on Fox Sports every Saturday and Sunday. Now we know they are for real, but they are still our secret. Save 10% on your order when you enter the promo code 3PEAT at checkout. Welcome back to another episode of the 3PEAT podcast. This is episode 14 of season 4. We're slowly approaching the end of another great season, but as always, we got a great show lined up for you today. I'm your host this week, Alex Castle, and I'm joined by
Stephen Benazzo
and Josh Bromowitz.
Welcome back, boys. Hope you both had a great week. Shooting on a Saturday today is a nice change of pace. Stevie, congrats on your completing your first semester, senior year. Very exciting stuff for you, my friend. I'm sure you're
pretty
relieved now to enjoy the break.
Dude, I'm thrilled to just be done. You know, it was I was talking to a few people, and you know, last year you guys could attest to this. Last year flew by. You know, granted we weren't there for the entire time, but last year just flew by. This year, you know, yes, it's crazy to think, wow, I'm already done. You know, first semester, but it did feel like it dragged on a little bit. It did feel like a lot happened. You know, I did go home more than I did all of last year and the year prior, just for, you know, certain things. But every time I was like, oh, my God, I got to go back. I got to go back, come back, go, you know. Now, finally, I get to just come back, chill, be home, be on good Wi-Fi. Well, knock on wood. And but it's definitely very relieving to be done. Now I can just sit back, hang out with the boys, drink a beer. I don't like beer, so drink a White Claw. You know, maybe a nice little cocktail. Watch some football and not have to worry about homework and any of that other bullshit. You know, I'm done.
There you go. Absolutely. That's the beauty. And the Wi-Fi is the major key. Cause like I said, we got a great show lined up for you today. So we're going to start with the gridiron. And I want to start off this topic with last week's game, the AFC East matchup between the Bills and the Patriots. That game ended in a 14-10 victory for the Pats. Crazy game, a lot of different elements, the weather, the style of play for both teams. And that's what I want to really start off with. This is how the Patriots approached the game from an offensive standpoint. Three completions total for Mac Jones.
No, three attempts.
Oh, three attempts, two completions, 19 yards total. And very interesting to see because you don't see this too often in football. I mean, running the ball, I mean, I don't know how accurate this percentage is going to be, but let's say the ball was run 97% of the game. And I know that, you know, Josh, being the big Jets fan, this was very frustrating for you to not only see the Patriots win, but to see the Mac Jones hype continue to go because, you know, he didn't even do a lot for this game. And they were still able to put up the victory. So I want to open up with you, Josh. My first question for you is, you know, at this point in the season, you know, with a game like this, is the Mac Jones hype real? Is the skill that people invest into this guy real? Or is this just an example, another example, I should say, of how he's really thriving only because of the system that he's in?
Yeah, I think it was a brilliant play call and a design playbook built by Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels to be able to throw the ball three times on the road in the snow, 30 mile per hour winds against another top team in the AFC and in the AFC East, a divisional rival, and to come out on top really speaks volumes to not just how well their offense played, but their defense. And it sickens me that people are riding the Mac Jones train because he did absolutely nothing in that game He threw the ball three times and completed two of them. And one of them was a horrible pass that Jonnu Smith had to make an incredible catch to adjust his entire body and help out Mac Jones' completion percentage. But that's besides the point. The Patriots' defense, without a doubt, is the best defense in the league. They're going to ride that defense, and they'll probably make the Super Bowl because of it. Matt Judon is probably the best outside linebacker in the league right now. And their secondary, J.C. Jackson and the McCourty brothers, they're ridiculous right now. And I'm not taking anything away from their defense because they're elite. And I'm glad the Jets played them already. We got our ass kicked already. I'm done thinking about the Patriots this year because they're nasty. Their offense is where I have the issue. Their running game was very strong. And Damian Harris, a phenomenal running back in this league. But Mac Jones, the hype needs to end. You could put any quarterback in the league into that Patriots offense, and the numbers will look the same. People don't realize what the effect Bill Belichick has had on that team for so long. And Mac Jones is just another example. For people to be saying Mac Jones is still the best quarterback out of this draft class is beyond me, because he's in the best system. He's in the best system right now. But that doesn't mean he is the best quarterback. I still think when all is said and done, talent, skill-wise, it'll probably be either Zach Wilson or Justin Fields. Maybe. I see you smiling there, buddy. I think for Justin Fields...
You know I'm smiling. Yeah, I like... Come on. I want to hear it more.
When for Justin Fields, you can't look at his stats this year because of Matt Nagy and so many injuries. No Allen Robinson for basically half the season. David Montgomery missed, I think, 3 or 4 games already. Not to mention Tariq Cohen, who last year in the beginning of the year was unstoppable, hasn't played a single down yet this year. You can't put the blame on Justin Fields. He also was the backup to Andy Dalton to start the year. Zach Wilson, everyone was quick to criticize because he looked like a rookie in his first few games. He had 4 interceptions because, you know, he's still a rookie. He's only played 8 games. But there's no surprise he's won offensive rookie. Actually, not even offensive rookie. He's been the NFL rookie of the week now twice this year. So is other rookie, Elijah Moore. So has other rookie, Michael Carter. The Jets have rookies. Rookies make mistakes. So when it all is said and done in terms of explosiveness, long-term excitingness, big plays, I think Zach Wilson or Justin Fields will be the best in this draft class. But Mac Jones is in the best system. Stats-wise, aren't the prettiest for Fields and Wilson, but long-term, you got to be patient. You can't criticize those two early on.
And this is, I'll add on to it. I think this goes back to the argument that Justin Fields and like Zach Wilson have some of the highest potentials to be the greatest and to be the best from that, the QBs from that class. But a guy like Mac Jones will probably maybe have the most success overall because, like you said, he's in that good system. He's playing under Belichick. He plays for New England, the Patriots. I mean, they had that dynasty for 20 years that all they knew was winning in Super Bowls. And then they had that one down year last year because it was a totally – I mean, you lose Tom Brady after 20 years of just winning and success and all these high awards, and then you lose him, and you try to put Cam Newton in your system. And, yes, Cam Newton was a great quarterback for Carolina back in his prime, but he just didn't fit that system.
And I just want to jump in about that because people forget that the bulk of the Patriots, like I just said, was the defense. Patriots were without so many guys last year on defense. J.C. Jackson was really the only guy on this year's team they had. So that was a big factor in Cam Newton not playing as well, because you look at the numbers this year, Patriots are on a 7-game win streak, right?
I believe so, yeah, because they're what, 9-4, right? Yeah.
Something like that. I believe it's a 7-game win streak. In all of those 7 games, except for one, which was the first game of their win streak, they have scored below 20 points. And that is because the defense in most of those games are also scoring a touchdown or two. So what has Mac Jones really done besides have a really high completion percentage? He really hasn't done much. And people are so blinded by completion percentage and what looks pretty, but there's really nothing there. I think it's just an empty stat that he's padding, because if you want to look at flashiness and what actually is getting the job done, look at Zach Wilson, how he's battling. He's taking hits after hits after hits because the Jets really aren't that good, but he's battling and he's making explosive plays. And he's throwing the ball 40 yards down the field to Elijah Moore. Justin Fields has taken hits after hits after hits. He has broken ribs, and now he's going to be playing again. He's going to make explosive plays. So I'm really just sick of the Mac Jones hype. And maybe it's because I don't like New England. But I really am not buying the hype, because the defense is kind of being forgotten about, because we're so used to the Patriots winning. We're so used to the Brady era. And people are so quick to assume that, oh, Mac Jones is the next Brady. That's just not true. The defense is the reason the Patriots are going to go far. And someone on the defense, let's say Matt Judon, is hurt, I think that's the end of the Patriots run.
All right, well, Franz, I'm going to play a little devil's advocate for you, because I have no bias towards the Patriots. I know, obviously, you being a Jets fan, and Castle, obviously, you being a Giants fan. It's not that, I mean, really, you have the advantage head-to-head over New England with the Super Bowls.
Brady still can't forget them, so.
Exactly. But for me, as a Bears fan, you know, I don't mind the Patriots. I have nothing against them. Yeah, do the fans get annoying? You know, oh, we have all these Super Bowls? Yeah, a little bit. But, again, at the end of the day, I have – nothing against them. So, listen, wait, Mac Jones is doing, I mean, like, you look at Monday night was pretty much a preview for today's Army-Navy game, where it was just straight running the ball and very little passing, if at all. So, all Mac Jones had to do, and even, who was a Patriots player that referenced it in the press conference? Was it Judon? I think it was Judon,
yeah.
Yeah, he was, like, joking around, like, oh, yeah, Mac Jones didn't do anything for that win, which, you know, yes, it's all jokes around, but really, he didn't have to do much. He just had to hand the ball off and make sure he didn't fumble or, you know, everything was just – he controlled the offense. But besides – I mean, that last week's game was just – the weather was insane. You're not going to get weather like that every game. But Mac Jones has done his job. His job was – especially as a rookie, we don't need you going out there and winning us, like, going crazy and winning us games. Obviously, you know, you want them to win games, but you just can't lose us games. And that's what he's been doing. That's what a lot of these quarterbacks, you obviously want to hit on a Patrick Mahomes, a Kyler Murray, a Russell Wilson, a Tom Brady. You're not. It's not. You have to. There's so many guys that just don't work out, and very few that work out to those guys I just listed. But at the end of the day, if you can have a guy that can just manage the game, and that's all the Bears needed Mitch Trubisky to do. And he did that first season, but then he couldn't do it the other two seasons. And we saw the defense decline, and that's where things just went bad and it didn't work out. And I'm trying to think of other – and there's plenty of other examples, and I want to just use the Bears as an example, but obviously
– And I wanted to get there because the Bears was one of my examples. We saw that defense really carried Mitch in that offense.
In 2018?
Yeah.
Yeah,
when they won 12. Because I'm not saying Mac Jones is a bad quarterback. I think he's a very good quarterback. I think he's talented. But for the hype to be as high is ridiculous. And for the amount of criticism that other rookie quarterbacks are getting because they're playing like, you know, rookies is really beyond me, because Mac Jones, people are saying, oh, he looks like a pro. Like, yes, he's in a Bill Belichick system where he's going to run the ball and try and not make mistakes, because he has a defense that could really carry for those mistakes. Whereas the Jets are all rookies, whereas the Bears have a coach who has two left feet and no brain. So I had to make a Matt Nagy joke for you, Steve.
All, please, more. We'll send him this audio just for him. We're going to make a separate audio where we just flame him the entire time and just send it to him and see how he responds. Merry Christmas, Matt Nagy.
I think we'll be sending Cole directly to the Nagy family. But anyway, what I was saying is Mac Jones is a very good quarterback right now because he's not making those mistakes because he doesn't need to. But to say he's the best quarterback out of this draft class when it's still very early, when guys like Fields and Wilson, for example, are taking these shots because they're rookies, they're learning.
Even Trevor Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence. Yeah. And who knows with Urban Meyer possibly not staying for the long-term future, can't also count him out either. So I think in terms of long-term, the hype needs to stop. I'm over it.
I'll admit that I bought into the hype beginning with Mac Jones, but I definitely have reevaluated the situation a little bit. And at the end of the day, I think what you said, what both of you have said, is spot on. And it really comes down to the defense and how well they've been doing. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but Mac Jones is the only rookie quarterback that was denied from being allowed to go on to the Peyton and Eli cast. And that right there just shows you how moldable he is in this Belichick system. And that's what it boils down to. The only credit that I will really give him is that he can produce some offense to keep them in games, because at the end of the day, the defense can't do everything. Yes, the Patriots defense is doing most of the work these games, but I just look at the Giants defense and the talent that's there, and they burn out because we can't produce anything on offense. At least Mac can work with the offensive playbook that this team has.
Or people are forgetting that Zach Wilson is the only offensive quarterback taken that has won Rookie of the Week, and he's done it twice, and no other rookie has won it once.
And that's another thing, too. And I hate to say it, and I think his success is overshadowed by the criticism that the Jets get as a whole, which they really shouldn't. Sal is a new coach. He went from defensive coordinator to head coach. They've had injuries on both sides of the ball. Wilson didn't get the best hand dealt to, and neither did Fields and neither did Lawrence. So this rookie quarterback class has had a lot of obstacles, and Mac Jones purely just got lucky. I think Justin Fields would have a lot more success if Robinson.
I'm going to turn the tables on you. What if Fields was in Chicago? What was in New England right now? What would that team look like because of Justin Fields' mobility?
No,
shake your head. No, I think it would be electric. I think it's what Cam really would have looked like, but with the ability, especially we saw Monday night how they heavily wanted to run the ball. They would have been having options after options Monday night specifically. Justin Fields has a very talented arm where their tight ends would be feasting every week. I think it really boils down to that Bill Belichick can mold any quarterback to being a system quarterback in the New England offense.
Well, I'm going to take it a step further and say he can mold quarterbacks who don't have the full athleticism. Look at Brady. Brady wasn't really a mobile guy. He was a pocket passer that can fling the ball anywhere, and that's what I'm seeing with Mac Jones. So Belichick, what makes him a great coach is he can take what skill set a player has and just turn around and run with it. And that's why Jones is successful. I mean, and again, you look at the coaching with these other rookie quarterbacks. Saleh, first year head coach. He's a defensive coordinator. You can't expect him to make Wilson into a superstar. And Wilson's doing what he can, and you got to give him the credit for that. Trevor Lawrence, he's having these issues with Urban Meyer. I'm not a big Urban Meyer guy, and I feel bad for Lawrence because he was seen as the savior coming out of Clemson. And Fields, I don't need to get into detail about that. We know enough from Stevie how bad Nagy as a coach is. So
really, this is news to me.
So this
tell us more, Castle.
So at the end of the day, this rookie quarterback class, with the exception of Mac Jones, has had a lot of obstacles to deal
with. And Trey Lance not even playing yet. Like, it's still too early to rule him out.
Not gonna lie, I completely forgot about Trey Lance.
So did I. But and that's the point, is that Mac Jones has had the most opportunity to play this season, and he's had the best system.
I will say this, though. I will say this with Mac Jones. And kind of it goes back to how I said his job really has just been to manage the games, not lose them, and, you know, rely on the defense. The defense is their greatest strength in that team. The rushing attack is another great strength of that team. But when the time came where Mac Jones had to step up and help lead the Patriots, he did. Think about that Dallas game. When they were throwing punches at each other back and forth, you know, who was leading that charge? That was Mac Jones.
That is why I said except for the first game, because that I believe that Dallas game, that was like right before the win streak.
Or even the Tampa Bay game. He was keeping them right with, obviously the defense was playing strong against the offense, but then Mac Jones was helped moving the ball against the Buccaneers defense, which is regarded as, you know, one of the better ones in this league. The Tennessee defense, he picked apart pretty well, where if you watch them, watch that Tennessee defense against Matt Stafford and the elite offensive Rams, the Rams couldn't do anything. Stafford looked like even worse than some of his Detroit days. And Stafford has looked like an MVP candidate so far this season, and he looked like he can do anything. So, like, obviously every week is different, but yes, there's weeks where Mac Jones hasn't looked that impressive, or he's just handed the ball off a lot. But there are cases where he's not that guy who's going to sling it far down the field every week. You know, yes, he might have did a little bit Alabama because it's Bama. They had – look, all those guys they had drafted into the league, and it's just Alabama. But now when it's the NFL, it's a lot better talent. You're not playing with guys that are five-star recruits all the way around, from the left tackle to the right tackle, from the outside receiver to the running backs. Like, you're not playing with that type of talent all surrounded by you. So that's why a guy like Trevor Lawrence, who was picked number one, hailed as the savior, one of the best QB prospects ever, or within the past 10 years, probably since Andrew Luck, he struggled this year because, one, the Jacks coaching is ass. It's awful. Urban Meyer should not be there. He's getting no help from the coaching and development. Everyone's against each other. And there's just really not the best talent. And some of the talent he's had have gone down. Travis Etienne, DJ Chark, or Shark. You know, they had one of their tight ends go down, then they trade for Dan Arnold. But as you can see,
inconsistency from James Robinson.
Exactly. So he hasn't had everyone there. He hasn't had the coaching help develop. I mean, Belichick is perfect for Mac Jones. This is what we want to do. Let's do it. And that's what they're doing. Trevor Lawrence, I mean, you hear all the reports, and Urban Meyer could be out, or this against Urban Meyer, that Urban Meyer's in the club with the girl sitting on his lap. You know, like, there's all this stuff going on. How can you focus? How can you? And then you play for Jacksonville. They were the worst team last year. So, and then the same thing with Zach Wilson and Justin Fields. There's all this other stuff going on where it's hard to just focus on football. Well, Mac Jones, all he has to do is focus on football, and that's all he's doing. And that's why you see it paying off. And that's why he's got his team in first place, the top of the AFC. There's not as much stress on Mac Jones as there are on these other quarterbacks. And there weren't as many expectations on Mac Jones as these other quarterbacks. And that's why these quarterbacks are showing a lot of their flaws that they didn't show in college. While Mac Jones isn't, obviously not that he hasn't shown any sort of flaws or any negative aspects of his game. But that's why I agree with you. It's too early to say on Mac Jones, because he's got the Patriots first place, and Zach Wilson's got the Jets in the bottom of the barrel, Justin Fields with the Bears at the bottom of the barrel, and Trevor Lawrence with the Jaguars at the bottom of the standings. You know, they suck. They're bust. You know, started looking for other quarterbacks. No, no, that's just pathetic. The Bears need to upgrade their O-line. They need to get more weapons. They need new coaching. The Jets have good coaching now. They just need to get more weapons. They need to get some healthy guys back and let Zach Wilson get into, I mean, no offense, Zach Wilson was playing for BYU. He didn't even play in a conference. He was just playing random schools. He needs to get used to this high-level competition and talent. And then Trevor Lawrence, he needs new coaching. He needs new weapons. He needs, you know, Trevor Lawrence needs a lot. So once those guys start to get that stuff, you know, it's going to show. And a guy like Patrick Mahomes, granted, he's super talented. But he, again, he came into the perfect system. Andy Reid, a guy like Travis Kelce, and then Tyreek Hill took that next step. He had so many weapons and great coaching, and the defense was pretty solid. And then they went out and got guys to pair with him, and that's why they were a juggernaut, a force. So,
I was just going to say, and to go on top of your point, talking about Wilson coming from BYU, let's not forget who Mahomes' coach at Texas Tech was.
Cliff Kingsbury.
Exactly. So at the end of the day, it all stems from the transition and the cards that these guys are dealt.
And even not to keep going, because now you guys got me going. Another person who's put in a good position was Justin Herbert, who had all these weapons. They drafted a lineman for him. They got new coaching, good coaching for him. And the defense, they have pieces on defense. Like he was put in a good spot. They got like Kyler Murray when he was drafted. He didn't have the best Cardinals team around him, and he struggled. You know, he made some big plays, but he wasn't putting up, you know, electrified numbers. But each year he got better. His numbers got better. And now look at him. He's an MVP candidate because they got him good coaching. They got him DeAndre Hopkins. They got him Rodney Hudson. They got him pieces in the line. They're building that defense because those teams are run well. Those teams have good foundation right now. And that's what Mac Jones went into, already instilled. While some of these guys are going to have to wait, you know, hopefully the Bears this offseason can do that with Justin Fields. Hopefully the Jets can continue to build on that. And poor Trevor Lawrence, I don't know what, but that dude, you know, Jacksonville needs a lot of saving to do. And so does Chicago, but like really Jacksonville, because man, that's just that's a bit of a crime.
He's lucky he's in a small market. That's all I gotta say.
Very true.
Yeah. I feel bad for him because he could tell he's like trying to do his best. He's trying to like make stuff happen and nothing's just going their way. And I think really they need to move on from Urban Meyer, and not to, you know, create a whole new conversation, but they need to move on from Urban Meyer. They got to really like, really Trevor Lawrence, what should we do? What kind of coaching do you want? You know, who should we target? Because really at the end of the day, he's going to be their main guy. You know, he's their face of their franchise. So you got to really communicate well with him. And I think that's what a lot of these other teams did with their young guys. And now look at all those guys that are doing well. So that's what I got to say. I got to shut up.
No, Stevie, it's always good. Always good to hear you elaborate a lot. We love Stevie's talks, Stevie's rants. But I think the conclusion is that Mac Jones had the best hand dealt to him. And next season will be very exciting to see how these rookie quarterbacks evolve their sophomore season in the league. I'm excited about it for sure. I just quickly, though, while we're talking about young guys, I just want to get your guys' thoughts on this Thursday night game, the Steelers, the Vikings, Chase Claypool's press conference, blaming the linemen with the ball placement, with the end of the game. You know, it's very disappointing to see this because the Steelers culture has not been like that at all. And there's so much talent with Claypool. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I just want to hear your guys' thoughts. I mean, is this a major flag that the Steelers might part ways with Claypool? You know, what does the future really hold?
I think it's pathetic on Claypool's end because a chance to possibly win the game, you're already down 8 with 10 seconds left and you're celebrating a first down with the clock ticking. And then to not own up to your mistakes after making 4 other boneheaded plays in the game,
costing a team a fumble, costing a team yards, costing a team this and that throughout the game. On top of it, just not even having the same production this year as you did in your rookie year. I think Claypool is the last one to be talking, but I guess it follows in the footsteps of previous Pittsburgh Steelers receivers, Juju Smith, as well as Antonio Brown. So I'm not really too surprised. Will they part ways, though? I don't think so, because he's still only 21, 22 years old. But it's pathetic on his end, and he needs to grow up real quick.
Yeah, I think Chase Claypool was really immature with everything. He should have just accepted, I shouldn't have done that. Instead, he tried to scapegoat other people and not put it on himself. And for some reason, I don't know why, because Mike Tomlin's such a great coach. He's such a great leader. But for some reason, the egos that a lot of these Steelers players have had, past and some present, not too many present, they just seem to overpower everything. And I don't think it's not Tomlin's fault. And I don't know, even you think you have a guy like Big Ben to lead the way to say, hey, knock it off. But between, like, you know, Le'Veon Bell, especially Antonio Brown, now it seems like Chase Claypool, obviously their locker room is not much of a headache as it was then. But for some reason, it always seems like there's always a little bit of tension or always a little butting of heads here and there. And I just, for the franchise that the Steelers are, all that rich history, all that success they've had, all those legends and Hall of Famers they've had, you'd think they would be one of the last teams to have, locker room or, you know, situations like this. And yet it seems like it's always a bit of a trend that they're getting guys that just seem to be headaches and never accept anything and always kind of blame someone else on their team. And I think, and it's just not good. And that's why the Steelers haven't really win, but they haven't really won anything. Last year they made the playoffs, but then the Browns smacked them. So, and then this year, I don't think they'll make the playoffs, to be honest. And again, it's not Mike Tomlin. I mean, granted, Mike Tomlin is a coach, and because he never used to have a problem with this, but as of lately, it seems like for some reason, the Steelers locker room is, and again, we're not in there. We can't really tell. But when you see actions like this, you got to wonder, there's got to be stuff going on within that locker room.
Absolutely. And that's why I said, with the culture of Pittsburgh, it's very upsetting to see this. And I do think with Big Ben retiring and some adjustments they'll need to make on defense, I do think big changes are to come for this team. So I'm very interested to see, as I'm sure you guys are. We got to move to hoops now. There's always stuff to talk about with basketball. We're all fans of teams in the Eastern Conference. Brooklyn right now is they're sitting at number one at 18-8. But right behind them are Stevie's Bulls at 17-9. Nets picked up a dub last night against the Hawks. And, you know, I'm a Knicks fan, but I despise the Hawks, so it was nice to see that. So let's start off with talking our teams. Josh, the Nets are at number one, like I said, picking up a nice win against the Hawks. They did, however, lose to the Rockets, which I'm sure was a frustrating game. No KD, so, you know, that definitely didn't help. But my question for you about the Nets is, you know, Harden, there's definitely, and I'm sure you can agree, there's been some inconsistencies with Harden this season. What do you think that's stemming from? Do you think it's just an off season? You think it's a mental thing?
I think it was really just Harden recovering from the hamstring injury, which was more severe than anticipated and people thought. And it took a while for him to adjust to his new role without Kyrie Irving on the court. So between those two, it's really taken Harden some time to figure out, like, what his role is on the team as the point guard, when to score, when to assist. But the last, like, five games or so, we've seen on a more aggressive approach from James Harden. So I'm really not worried anymore, because last night I saw the Harden that we all know and most people love to hate, because it was just Harden splitting two defenders and driving at two more at the basket and scoring an N1. So it's just the little plays like that really makes us Nets fans really happy to see. And Kevin Durant is just Kevin Durant. If he doesn't win MVP, then he's finishing second behind Steph Curry. And there's really no debate between that. So it hit KD, you know, he's going to drop 30 every night. Harden, it's really, you know, now it's come to the point where, you know, he'll drop at least 20. He'll get you at least double digit assists. He'll get his rebounds. And he's good for a steal or two. His defense is not good, but when he needs to, he'll make those timely plays on defense and make those stops. And when he's feeling it, he's feeling it. He could drop 40. He could drop 50. He's dropped 60 before. So the big thing with the Nets this year that differs from last year is the defensive approach. Everyone took advantage of the Nets on defense last year because it was all about offense. There was no focus on defense. But the switching on defense is so much cleaner this year. And it's a joy to watch the Nets play because it's a whole team effort instead of two or three guys trying to beat you every night. It could be Cam Thomas. It could be Patty Mills. It could be Bruce Brown, DeAndre Bembry, Paul Millsap, LaMarcus Aldridge. Any of these guys, not named Kevin Durant and James Harden, on any given night could step up in a big way and help the team win, which is really good to see.
It is, especially because people thought that the Nets gave up a lot for getting Harden, you know.
And I was one of those people. I thought it was way too much. Losing Jared Allen, you see what he's doing in Cleveland this year. They're in the playoffs right now. They're ahead of the Knicks. So
don't get me started about the Knicks. But
we'll get there soon. Don't you worry. You can't hide from us. But Jared Allen is on pace to be an all-star this year with what he's doing. So it definitely pains me to see it, but we all Net fans love and knew this Jared Allen was coming because he's a beast. So to lose him and then you lose Caris LeVert, I mean, that situation isn't that good anymore in Indiana, so that doesn't hurt as much. And then you know you were going to lose Spencer Dinwiddie too. So it was a lot, but the way he's been playing as of late is definitely making it worth it.
Absolutely. And my one other question for you before we move on, just because it's something we've touched upon earlier, have you seen anything better with the rotations from Nash? I know this was a frustration you had in the beginning. Have you seen improvement? Do you think as a coach, he's developed more throughout the season?
Yeah, I think the good thing from Steve Nash is he's learned from his first year to his second year, which I knew was going to happen. Nash received a lot of criticism, but honestly, going back to the football talk, he was a rookie head coach. You can't expect him to play to have rotations down like Steve Kerr has in Golden State or Thibodeau last year with the Knicks. Those are veteran coaches who have the game down like that. Steve Nash was a rookie. It takes time, just like rookie players. And this year, he's seeing what rotations work and what doesn't. He's playing Cam Thomas over Javon Carter, which is a blessing. Cam Thomas is some special talent. He's the future of this Nets organization, and I'm very excited for him. He's playing Bruce Brown off the bench. Bembry is a starter. Bembry gives more size and speed as opposed to Bruce Brown. Paul Millsap I could live without, and I wish Blake Griffin was getting more minutes. But last night against Atlanta, Nick Claxton played the entire fourth quarter over LaMarcus Aldridge. It's the little things like that where he's riding the hot hands, and it's really good to see. And I think we'll talk about that in a second with the Knicks. That's what Thibodeau is struggling to do right now with the Knicks, is he's so focused on sticking to the minutes and his way of doing it as opposed to riding the hot hand, which I think has costed the Knicks in some games, but we'll worry about that when we get to the Knicks.
Absolutely. And yeah, like I said, I'm glad to see it with the Nets. Cam Thomas is definitely going to be a special talent. And it's nice that they can remain number one, even without Kyrie. They were able to regroup with the trade. It's good.
Hey, I'll be honest. And Steve, you might disagree because you're a lost child anyway. I really do think this Nets team could win a championship without Kyrie.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm surprised. I was expecting like a crazy reaction.
Nah, listen, Kyrie's good, but he's too much of a headache to deal with. And you know, to be honest, I'm not going to lie. I think you're better off without him. Just play with the guys you have or get another guy. And he's, again, he's got great talent. His handles are insane. He's a great player. But I don't know what happened. He was focused his first couple years in this league. And after that championship he won, he just started, like, some of the things he was saying and some of the things he was doing, it was just like, dude, like, you know, like, what's going on? Like, are you, like, you know, not that he should just focus on basketball, but, like, some of the stuff he was, like, doing and saying was just like, the earth is flat. Like, is that relevant to anything? You know, like, well, why is this now a big topic? Why is he, you know, so some of his actions, I just, like, it doesn't help him. It doesn't help the team. So I think with him being away, to be honest, better for you guys. You can focus. You don't have to worry about him and what he's saying. And, you know, because then the reporters are asking his teammates, oh, Kyrie said this. What do you think about this? And they're like, what the hell? Like, you know, they don't have to deal with that.
I also think the big part is, which people tend to forget about, is the defensive aspect. Yes, Kyrie is a good defender. He's one of the quickest guys in the league. I love Kyrie Irving still. I want him to come back. But the defensive focus is crisper. Yes, James Harden is not a good defender. And Kyrie is probably most likely a better defender than Harden. But with Kyrie not there, you're able to have another defensive-minded guy like DeAndre Bembry out there. Bruce Brown is able to get more minutes. So last night when Trae Young, as Cass likes to call him, the balding guy, is trying to shake and bake on the Nets, you have guys who are good on defense to be able to switch on him instead of having a mismatch. And I think that definitely helps in the Nets' favor right now.
And for a moment, please don't get mad at me. I know you're a little mad at me with the other podcast, but please don't get mad at me when I say this. This is just my honest truth. I don't think the Nets are a good team. I just don't think they're a championship team. I'm not impressed by them. Yes, they have a winning record. Yes, they have superstars. KD's phenomenal. But I just don't like what I see from them. I don't think they have what it takes to run through the East and then take out whoever from out West. I honestly don't. I just...
I disagree on one part. I think they could definitely run through the East still, because aside from who else right now is posing as a serious threat to the Nets? I know the Bulls are up there, but Milwaukee, the Sixers, I really don't see anyone else posing as threats like the West teams do. So I think the Nets could still hold on to that one seed, run through the East, and then it'll be a challenge because Golden State, we know what they're doing. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson can return any day now. Phoenix, Devin Booker, Chris Paul, DeAndre Ayton, they were in the finals last year. So I think for the Nets, it really, you'll see crisper basketball as the year goes on because they are still trying to develop as a team each game. They're only at the quarter mark. There's still a lot of basketball to be played. It's good to see Kevin Durant actually going to be playing a full season, looking healthy. James Harden also, people are so quick to judge his game, but there's still a lot of basketball left before you judge him. LaMarcus Aldridge had a serious health condition and is now playing again. So I think it's got to take time.
And my thing, though, too, with the playoffs is, like, right now looking like, yeah, Milwaukee doesn't look impressive. Philly doesn't look impressive. Miami.
I will say Chicago is impressive. I will give you that.
And yeah, not even being biased as like a Bulls fans, but just like watching them, they actually look like a good team. They have good chemistry. DeMar's on a whole nother mission. So,
I love Lonzo with the Chicago team. That was a great signing.
I think the best free agent move in all of the NBA, underrated move, was Alex Caruso to the Bulls.
100%. And shout out to you, Josh, for telling me to pick him up in fantasy. He's been great in that sense too.
I think Caruso has a very serious case to be on an all defensive team this year because of the work that he's doing on the end that really no one wants to be doing. And he's taken like it is mission to guard the best players when he comes off the bench or even starting is really impressive. And it's definitely helped the Bulls this year.
Oh, for sure. We lacked in defense. That's why they got like a guy last year, Vucevic, and then getting a guy like Caruso. And then being completely honest, when the Bulls first signed Caruso, I was like, come on, are you serious? I know we needed depth pieces that we got Lonzo. I'm trying to remember if Caruso signed before DeMar or if he signed after DeMar, but I really wanted DeMar. And I'm not just saying that because of
I thought it went DeMar, Lonzo, Caruso, but I might be imagining it.
Lonzo was first. I know that Lonzo was first. Okay, and then
I think it was Lonzo, Caruso, DeMar.
And DeMar, yeah.
DeMar was late. That's right.
DeMar was late
because
he was holding out. He wanted to go to LA.
He wanted to go to the Lakers.
Yeah. And they just were not, they were like negotiating with him, but then they would not pull through. And then he said, all right, whatever.
Which is why Caruso and DeRozan were close to each other because the Lakers weren't able to re-sign Caruso or they just let him go.
They chose not to, yeah.
So the Bulls being able to get Caruso and DeRozan were very close to each other.
Yeah, because they both felt like the Lakers kind of disrespected them. Caruso helped them win a championship game, was clutch off their bench, and they just said, all right, we don't want you anymore. And then DeMar, who's been an all-star for how many years, who had so much success in this league in Toronto and even kind of was keeping San Antonio afloat a little bit when they really shouldn't have been. And they were just, no. And they opted to go for Westbrook. And we'll kind of see how that's paying
off. What a huge mistake. I think the Lakers are going to get bounced the first round. I'm sorry.
No. Easily.
I know we're not talking about that, but.
No. I mean, how about both LA teams?
Okay, the Clippers you could expect because Kawhi being out for the year, you know that they weren't going to be as serious of a threat.
Yeah.
They only have so much to work with, and Paul George is playing very well.
No, you're right. But
the Clippers know this is kind of an off year, but the Lakers, they were going all in to be this disaster. Honestly, they're looking so much worse, in my opinion, than the Knicks. I know, like, we like to criticize the Knicks, and I'll get to that after.
You say that.
We'll get to that after. Don't you worry. But LeBron, Westbrook, and Anthony Davis, I don't like them at all as a big three. And I told Castle this earlier. Spacing in basketball is a huge deal. You need shooters to support LeBron. You need shooters to support Westbrook. Anthony Davis is not a shooter as much as he might think so and might attempt to be a shooter. He's shooting below 30% from three, which I'm not a mathematician. We need TJ here. And unfortunately, he's not here because he's the mathematician. But 30% is not good. They don't have shooters. Instead, they decide to put another center there on the floor with them. It's a terrible idea. The Lakers have terrible spacing. They can't switch. They can't shoot. They're a hot mess right now. So I'd love to see them end up as like a 7 or 8 seed and face the Warriors or the Suns first round so they can get bounced early.
I'm just so astonished by the Warriors and the success they've had. It really, Steph Curry is, when they were winning all those championships, well, he had Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. And then when KD was added, like you would hope they wouldn't. If they didn't win, it was just from what was going on there. But now you look at it, Steph Curry really is probably the most valuable player because he's yielded them and willed them to the best record in the NBA without Klay Thompson, without a guy like KD. And Draymond Green's not the same player as he was anymore.
He's still a factor, but he's not – like, right now he's expected to be the second player on that team, and he's never been a scorer like that.
He's not the same guy that was winning those championships.
Curry's scoring is basically having to take on his and Klay Thompson's role, which is the most impressive part.
Yeah. So, like, what Curry has done, and that's why I really am impressed, and I'm all for Steph Curry winning the MVP because, in reality, he is the most valuable player. Because you saw last year when Steph was out, they sucked. And this year they got him back, and they didn't get the other, you know, they didn't get Clay back yet. And they really didn't make an addition. I mean, I do like Andrew Wiggins. I really think he's a good fit for them. He's been playing well with them, and Curry's got him playing well. But they didn't really go out and get anyone crazy. And even the rookies haven't made the biggest impact yet.
Because they have so much depth. That's not the rookies' fault. They just have so much depth. I like the rookies that they drafted, but there's no room for them.
I mean, Jonathan Kuminga was like one of the top prospects in this draft, and he's barely touched the floor yet.
I like Kuminga and Moses Moody a lot, but yeah, who knows when they'll play? Because guys like Gary Payton, who is supposed to be like their 13th man, stepping up, and he's like this next coming of his father, Gary Payton. Like, it's crazy what he's doing.
Yeah, and even a guy like James Wiseman hasn't played yet.
He hasn't played. Yeah.
And then last year, it wasn't able to like get into rhythm. And Wiseman, again, he was highly recruited out of high school, highly touted coming into the draft, 7-foot guy who's athletic. I think he could shoot a little bit. And the Warriors always lacked that really solid big man. And they finally got one. And yet he's yet to even perform because he's been injured. So, like, just think about it. The Lakers, even if LeBron's out, they still have Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook, and they still can't do anything. The Warriors, Steph is pretty much by himself, and he's still – it's not like he's got them a winning record into, like, the playoffs as an 8 seed. He's got the best record in the NBA. And really, that just shows how good and how valuable Steph is, because we saw last year without him, they were a mess. They were awful. They were one of the worst teams in the league.
It's been incredible to watch this Golden State team. It really has. Steph Curry, he just changed shooting for the game when he stepped into this league. He changed not only the 3-point shot for the NBA, but he really changed the culture for basketball and how young guys come up in this league and how much more emphasis they put on their jump shot.
So, Steve, I was talking to Castle about this recently, and I was really shocked at first when I saw it. The more I thought about it, I'm like, I put more thought into it. I don't remember where I saw it, but if, let's say, the Warriors win a ring this year, Curry obviously wins Finals MVP, would you put him in the GOAT debate over LeBron? So he jumps LeBron, it would be Jordan or Curry. Because, like Castle just said, he revolutionized the way people shoot. Like, you think of Steph Curry, he doesn't look like an athletic guy who could just, you take a foot past half court, he's a threat already. Whether it's passing or scoring, he's the most dominant guy on the court at 6 foot, whatever he is. He's not the tall guy. And for him to do what he's been doing for so long, it's tough for me. I've thought about it, and it's really tough. And I'm curious what you think.
It is tough. Because you think, well, you know, Curry's not throwing down dunks like Jordan and LeBron did. And, you know, maybe he's not getting all these blocks and rebounds. But at the end of the day, Curry has won numerous championships. Like you said, he revolutionized.
Even without Kevin Durant there. He still won before Kevin Durant was there.
You know, and you can say, well, you know, he had Klay Thompson in this. But again, I love Jordan. And I think Jordan's a GOAT. But Jordan had Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman. LeBron has had Kyrie Irving, Anthony Davis, Kevin Love. You know, Dwayne Wade. How did I forget the Heat? Jeez. Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh. So, like, they've all had guys. So to be honest, it would be kind of messed up to not include Curry. You never think to include Curry in a debate like this. But in reality, I do think Curry does get a little disrespect because obviously everyone agrees that he'll be a Hall of Fame player. But when you start throwing him to the top, you know, he's going to pretty soon have all the shooting records.
I don't know where next game he's about to break the all-time three-pointers made record.
Over Ray Allen's, right?
Yeah, and he did it, and he's going to do it in basically 400 less games than Ray Allen did it. And we all know what, and we all know what kind of shooter Ray Allen was.
UConn baby. You know, but, sorry. Gotta show the Huskies some love. And that, but if you think about it, they play 82 games a year, regular season. So regardless, forget playoffs. That's like almost, that's more than 4 years worth of seasons in, that Curry has done it less. It's unbelievable. So you know what? As much as it feels weird to say, and there, I guess you could add a lot of other guys into this conversation too, but Curry, so even if he's not thrown into the GOAT debate with Michael Jordan and LeBron, he deserves to get a lot of recognition, or at least deserves to get mentioned in some of these debates and thrown into with guys like that, because you know what? He has earned it. He has changed this game, and reality, like I was just saying before, the dude is the most valuable player in this league right now, at least to me. I guess to maybe you could say Giannis and stuff like that, but
Giannis, not yet. It's way too early.
Not yet. I mean, like
Kevin Durant, though, maybe.
Maybe, but look at the Nets last year.
I didn't say definitely. That's why, yeah. I said maybe.
You know, listen, KD is a phenomenal player, and he's tough to replace. But like all the teams he's been on, you know, look at the Thunder when KD left. Westbrook still yield them to playoffs. I mean, granted, they got Paul George then, but the Thunder still had some success even when Westbrook, Paul George, and KD were all gone. Chris Paul led them to play. So like, you know, so like the Warriors, when Steph Curry wasn't healthy or wasn't playing, they didn't have a lot of success. So I do think that Curry does deserve to, you know, I'm not going to put the label that he is the greatest of all time, but pretty soon, if, you know, the more seasons goes, and we'll see how the, you know, maybe this year was just, he played unreal, and then next year they'll go back down to earth. Who knows? But if he continues to go at this pace and the Warriors are right back in contending in the West like they were the past how many years, then you know what? Yeah, he deserves to be. And think about Curry, like, attracted guys like Kevin Durant to want to play with him. He helped, you know, elevate, because obviously he was there before Klay Thompson was, correct? So he really helped Klay Thompson fit in nicely and form that nasty duo. None of that would have been possible without Steph Curry. The Warriors were a joke before Curry. I mean, granted, they had what was that guy's name? Back when they had the old jerseys and all that. What was that?
Baron Davis,
yeah.
Ellis, I mean.
Yeah. They had guys, but they weren't winning like they were.
Jason Curry. Richardson, you could go on. Yeah. Right. It wasn't what it was now.
Exactly. I'm not saying they didn't have legends and Hall of Famers and all that, but they weren't doing what they've been doing now. You know, Golden State has been like one of the top teams. You know, half these kids now are Warriors fans, or even in Connecticut are Warriors fans, because heck, my nan and pop love Steph Curry. You know, they were like Warriors fans because of Steph Curry, because they love Steph Curry so much. They watch him because that's how good he is. That's how much of an impact he's had. So now I'm just kind of rambling, but I do think, you know what, even if you don't put him there, he deserves a lot more respect on his name, and he deserves to be in some top debates.
I agree, and this is something that we'll definitely have to continue. This is great. You know, the LeBron-Jordan debate has been something that's been talked about so much in sports, and there hasn't been change, and it's great that more guys have evolved and just have done so much more in this game, where now we can include guys like Curry and even KD in the conversation. So next season, this is definitely a big debate that we're going to have. But before we wrap up today's show, as always, for all you fantasy heads out there, we got to give you our starts and sits for this week. And I'm not picking any Patriots guys this week, I'll tell you that. I just can't gamble on Bill and Mac again. So here are my two starts for this week. Josh, I'm sorry to have to do this. I know you're going to be at the game tomorrow, but my first start is Callaway for the Saints. Kamara's coming back. I know Bryce Hall is a lockdown guy, and I'm not denying it, but Callaway is pretty consistent with his red zone TDs. And I bet Sal is going to have a nice defensive game plan for Kamara. So I'm expecting a little more of a passing game. So I'm saying start Callaway. And the other guy I'm saying to start is Michael Gallup. Gallup had a touchdown in the last game for the Cowboys. I've seen more production out of him and Lamb than Cooper, even though Cooper just returned off the injury. I think Dak is developing more chemistry with those two. Haven't liked what I've seen out of Zeke, frankly, this season. And I think, you know, Gallup is a great deep ball threat, and he's a great, great red zone target. And I think Washington's strengths have really been more with what they've been doing in the run game. Yeah, they have a decent secondary. I don't want to give Landon Collins a lot of credit because he's a former Giant, but I'm expecting another good game out of Gallup. So those are my two starts for next week. Mr. Fromwitz, who are we starting this week?
I really do think the Callaway one will come back to haunt you, because people don't like to talk about the Jets positively, but I do.
Bryce Hall, I gave Bryce Hall the credit. I did give him the credit, but...
And like I told you earlier, that Bryce Hall will be guarding him, and he shut down some top guys already. So I'm just saying, don't be surprised if Callaway is added to that list.
About the Gallup one, at least the Gallup one, you at least will.
Oh, I like that. I think it's
all right. We'll take it. It's one for two.
My two starts. The first one is Jalen Guyton against your New York Football Giants.
Had to do it to me, but I picked against the Jets, so it's only fair.
It's revenge. With Jalen Guyton, it's the next man up with the Chargers. I don't think it really matters who Justin Herbert's throwing the ball to, as long as they have two hands that could catch a football. Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, they're both questionable in COVID protocol, so who knows what their status is. Jalen Guyton's just the next man up, and he'll probably put up the same numbers that Allen or Mike Williams would have put up anyway, because the Giants' defense looking like Swiss cheese out there. And the other one is Hollywood Brown against the Cleveland Browns. And the Cleveland Browns have been banged up recently with their rookie and bright cornerback, Greg Newsome II, out with a concussion. And that was probably going to be the guy who was going to guard Hollywood Brown, because he could match his speed on the outside. And with that now out, I like Lamar trying to air it out more to Hollywood Brown, because Lamar has struggled recently in the passing game, trying to target a corner who's not as quick trying to guard Hollywood Brown might be a matchup that Lamar likes to see. Those are my two starts this week.
I don't know much about the Guyton guy for the Chargers, but you made a very solid point. Anyone getting passes from Herbert, as long as they can catch, should have a good production. And I really like the Hollywood Brown one. Any of those games, any of those division matchups in that division are so fun to watch, and I can really see Hollywood Brown being fed. So both are solid. I hate to say it, but the way that the Giants defense has been playing, any of these guys on the Chargers can have a good game. So good picks. Stevie B, who we picking this week? Who we starting?
All right, first one, Chuba Hubbard versus Atlanta. We know McCaffrey's done. He's no more. So now this is Chuba's turn to be the lead back. And previously, when he played Atlanta earlier in the season, when McCaffrey again was injured, he did pretty well. I think he got around 14 points. So I know Carolina has been up and down this year and all that, but they do run the ball pretty well. You know, they use the running backs a lot out of the backfield, receiving, and then obviously they get just a rushing. So expect for him to have a pretty good game, Chuba Hubbard. And then my other one, Javonte Williams. Let me just double check again who he's playing, the Broncos. And so Javonte Williams coming off a huge game on Sunday night against the Chiefs. And I think, especially if Melvin Gordon is out again.
I think they're playing Detroit, right? I think
that's. Yes. Yes.
I almost picked Javonte Williams, so I'm glad you have him, Steve. Yeah. Great minds think alike, buddy.
Exactly. There we go. So Javonte Williams against Detroit, because we know Detroit is not to diss them, but they are not good.
Top dogs in the NFC North now.
Yeah, they're still in playoff contention. I don't know what I'm saying right now, but Javonte Williams, if Melvin Gordon's out, then he's definitely gonna be the lead back. But I think really they want to start grooming him to be their top guy. Melvin Gordon is only under contract for what, this year, and then he's a free agent again or one more year. If you have him, definitely start him. So Chuba Hubbard, Javonte Williams, you heard it here.
Both solid picks. Stevie Williams coming off a big game, like you said, playing Detroit. No explanation there. And Hubbard against Atlanta, you said, right? Hubbard against Atlanta, yeah. Both 5-7. So that's going to be a big game. Definitely could see him being fed. So good amount. Good amount, good picks. And my two sits, sorry, Stevie, this first one, you might not like it because he is coming off of a big game, but I don't like the matchup defensively, and that's Montgomery. Green Bay's defense, you really can't count out this season. Even with his successes last week, Allen Robinson is coming back, so I could see them trying to work him in the game plan more. Montgomery will definitely get a good amount of handoffs for sure, but I don't know if he's going to make it to the red zone.
That's fine. I actually picked up Green Bay D in one of my leagues because my defense was on bye. I said, you know what? I don't expect anything out of Chicago. So, hey, listen, I mean, I love Montgomery and I hope he does well, but at this point, the season's lost. I don't care. I know Green Bay is going to kick our ass. So it's a good sit.
Love the enthusiasm, but I'm glad you agree with me on that one. So, and then the other guy I'm saying to sit is actually someone that I have on my team. It's Joe Mixon playing against the 49ers. I like San Francisco a lot this season. I'm a fan of their defense. I can definitely see him being shut down early. It's a tough matchup for the Cincy team. It really is. I think they're going to try to give it to Mixon early. They're going to try to get him hot, but it's going to get shut down. It's going to force Burrow to get to the passing game. And we've seen what this 49ers defense can do against good teams. Let's not forget what they did in that, I think it was a Monday night game when they played the Rams. And that was with Stafford and the offense that they had, one of the hottest offenses in the league. So you got to imagine what they're going to do against this Bengals team. So sitting those two running backs this week. Josh, who are we sitting on your end?
I think people don't like talking about San Fran because I don't know why. I really like their defense as of late. And people forget last year how banged up they were. And that's why they had such an off year. But Nick Bosa is hands down one of the best defenders in this league.
Insane.
And he's a factor in the run game. So he's going to be in the backfield all game, whether Joe Mixon likes it or not. So,
and I just want to just add one quick thing about that. It's crazy. With all those factors, Mixon is almost projected 20 points for tomorrow.
Yeah, I could guarantee he won't be hitting that unless if he somehow like gets two touchdowns like on the goal line or something. That's it. I can't see him breaking loose for runs because a Kyle Shanahan defense does not have holes like that. So I do like that sit, especially. And I mean, the Mixon one makes sense. The Montgomery one makes sense. Sorry, Steve. Aaron Rodgers owns the Bears. He said it.
Yeah, well, I listen. Now you're getting a little overboard. Now we're going to bring you pipe it down.
He said it in Chicago, not me.
Yeah, I know. And I hope Justin Fields runs for a touchdown and then goes right into the Green Bay section and says, I'm going to own you.
Hey,
that would be something.
If Justin Fields could Lambo leap, that would be
or yeah, if Justin Fields, if he gets a touchdown, if
discount
he
double the discount double check,
discount double check says, I will own you, or
the time is
Lambo leaps. Oh my God, that would make they could lose 40-7, but that would make my whole season. season.
Or, you know, if he like looks in the camera and like says, stick to Jeopardy, I think that would be great.
Or something like that. And he says, shout out Stevie from 3-peat.
Oh, exactly. All are good options, all realistic, of course. So before Stevie gets even more overboard, I'm going to give my sits. First is Josh Jacobs against Kansas City. And it kind of shocks me that this late in the season that I'm going to say to sit someone against Kansas City, because who would have thought that we're talking about Kansas City because of their defense. Their offense, I've been wondering what happened to Pat Mahomes, but their defense has really won them games as of late. It looks like Pat Mahomes is just not himself, not even close to it. And their defense is playing very well, especially with a run game. The first time the Raiders and the Chiefs played, Josh Jacobs had 16 yards on 8 carries, and that's it. So now this game is going to be an arrowhead. I'm going to sit Josh Jacobs because he's also been battling a bunch of injuries. I know he's healthy, but that could easily change knowing Josh Jacobs. And the other is James Conner against the Rams. The Rams have been playing solid as of late, and their defense is finally turning up. And one angle I'm going to look at, and people aren't talking about it yet, and I think they will come Sunday, is Von Miller is on the Denver Broncos. He was on the Broncos when Demaryius Thomas was there. And we all know Demaryius Thomas just passed away. So in addition to the Broncos, I think Von Miller is going to be playing this game with his entire heart out. And he's going to try to secure the victory in honor of Demaryius Thomas. And I really think we're going to see Von Miller play his best football of the year because of it. And if Von Miller's playing his best football, it's going to be a nightmare for the offense. So those are my two sits.
The Jacobs sit, at first I was a little iffy about it because I do like Jacobs. He's one of my more favorable running backs, but with those stats from last game, playing an arrowhead, I think the odds are stacked against him. And even though I'm playing James Conner this week, he's my number one running back. I think all the factors, again, are against him, especially with the Von Miller thing with Demaryius Thomas. Very tragic, but I do think he'll be really trying to ball out for him. So very solid sits. Last but not least, Stevie, who we sitting?
All right. So, well, I just want to give my little, you know, condolences to Demaryius Thomas and his family. You know, obviously, such a tragic passing. And when I saw the news, it was just, I couldn't believe it. And at first it was, I was just on Twitter and I saw his name trending. I said, oh, I wonder what's going on with him. And then when I saw like people saying there's no way, you know, no way he passed away and blah, blah, blah. But it was a lot of rumors. So I said, I'm going to wait. And then it slowly more verified people. And then actual sources came out like ESPN and guys in that cover that area in the Broncos, you know, confirmed it. So definitely just tragic news. We all know, remember watching him. He was a fantastic player. Made some really big plays, had some really big season, played in a lot of big games. And what I really could take away with, it seemed like he was just such a tremendous person on the field and off the field, volunteered a lot of his time, a lot of charity, was always smiling. So rest in peace to Demaryius Thomas. And, you know, hopefully his, you know, family is able to, you know, was okay during this tough time. So with that, my two sits. So I have DeAndre Hopkins against the Rams. Kind of promise, like you were saying, you know, I know the Rams defense has not been playing that well. So guys like Von Miller is going to want to start playing better, especially with everything that happened to Demaryius Thomas. You know, he's going to have a lot to play for. And DeAndre Hopkins just coming off from an injury. He hasn't really been playing that well. He hasn't been getting that many yards. He's been getting touchdowns, but not that many yards. And if Jalen Ramsey shadows him, forget about it. So I know that's going to be an interesting battle. And so I have D-Hop. If you haven't sit him, just give him a little more time to get back in the rhythm, get a better matchups. And then Castle, sorry. You know, I kind of just realized that you sat the Bears running back, and I'm going to sit the Giants running back, Saquon.
Only fair. And you know what? The way he's been playing, I really can't get mad at that sit.
Exactly. So, you know, my brother has him, and every week he's, you know, he plays him, and then he's always like, you know, or do I play Saquon? I'm telling, dude, just like take Saquon out, play someone else. And so if you have him, play someone else. I think we've given him enough time to get back into the rhythm. Jason Garrett's now gone, and he just can't get it going.
I don't think it'll get any better for him until the Giants fix their offensive line.
I agree. So I just think Saquon, you know, yes, he's maybe 40 yards, a couple catches out of the backfield. I just don't think I just don't see him doing anything special. The Chargers defense, sometimes it plays solid, sometimes it's not. They've been playing better as of late. So I just don't think it's a favorable matchup, and especially for a guy who really hasn't shown out at all this year, right, Castle? I mean, is there one game that you can think of where he really, like had one of the best fantasy games? Not really. I think. And then he got hurt. So he's kind of been a tough pick all year, and I feel bad. I like Saquon, but at the end of the day, it's not about emotions. It's about what you're producing, and he hasn't been producing. So you got to sit him. I don't care if he's Saquon Barkley or – you know, a backup. If he's not doing anything, then put him to the bench.
I think what's ironic about those two starts, Stevie, is that the league that I have DeAndre Hopkins and Barkley in, I have to start them together this week. So very ironic, but I can't disagree with it. Hopkins.
So you're going to be upset in one way or another. You're either going to be upset that Steve's picks worked and your team is terrible, or you're going to be upset because Steve's going to be angry next week.
Exactly.
I won't be angry. It's just fair. It was what we think. I have Kyler Murray. I hope DeAndre Hopkins goes off. I don't think he will. You know, it's just stuff like that. I won't get mad.
He's making very fair picks, and you even said it yourself, Josh. Once the line gets fixed, we'll see production from Barkley, but this season's a wash, but I'm not even going to get into that. But solid picks all around, boys. And with that, that concludes another episode. Before we sign off and say goodbye, we just want to do our usual thank yous. Thank Wild Chat Sports for their partnership with us. They're always doing great things. Kevin's always doing a great job running the show there. So definitely go check them out. We want to thank our sponsor, Liberty Shirt Co., for being a great sponsor for us. Don't forget to use that promo code at the beginning of the show. They got some great quality products. Every Sunday you see their material being repped hard. So definitely go check them out. And last but not least, we want to thank our social media guy, the mathematician himself, TJ Hummel. He's always doing a great job posting stuff, keeping you guys updated with everything sports. Definitely want to go check out one of our latest posts about the Coyotes and what's going on with them. Some very interesting stuff there.
And shout out RPO Podcast. That's my other one, college football.
Hey, I need to cut this.
I shouted out 3-peat on the RPO one, so it's only right.
It's only fair. I respect it. We'll make sure to include that. Shout out to the RPO Podcast for all you college football heads. They got some good stuff over there. Josh and I went to school with these guys along with Stevie. So they're making some good content. So definitely go check it out. Who knows? Maybe we do a collab in the future.
And I would be for both sides, you know. It'd be great. Castle, I didn't think about that, you know. One big Zoom call.
Absolutely.
Look at Fromm's face. He's
us Hartford Hawks gotta stick together. Well, Fromm's one way or another he'll be there. So I'm not worried. Especially if there's talk of Penn State, he won't be able to resist himself. So
there you go. There's a lot to talk about,
especially with Clifford back. So we'll save that for another show.
You know, we'll do it live from Happy Valley. There you go. That's where he'll go.
Oh, yeah. That'd be something. But another time and another day. But thank you all again for listening. And tune in next week. We're getting down to the final episode. So, you know, we're going to be leaving some cliffhangers for season 5. So tune in next week. And thank you again.